everyone. My name is Aarti, and this is the Mahabharata. Episode 61, Descent of Ganga, also available online at www.themahabharatapodcast.com or facebook.com/themahabharatapodcast. You might not have noticed, but our last episode was all about water, that wondrous thing without which none of us could be. This is precisely the point of the Indravritra story we discussed last time. The Asuravritra has dammed up the waters of the earth, so life cannot flourish. The god Indra then kills Vritra to free the water, giving us the lush green earth we know and love. Why Vritra would want to do such a thing is not immediately clear. Is he incorporating a bottled water business? Is he a misanthrope? Is he just a jerk? Maybe they're all the same thing. What we do know is that in the World Cup finals between the Devas and the Asuras, the football is humanity. Vritra's friends, seeking revenge for their loss, go on a nightly killing spree worthy of Tarantino. Then during the day, they take refuge in the ocean, whereupon water, water everywhere, to the last drop Agastya drinks. This brings us to King Sagar's story, also about water, answering the question of how the ocean is subsequently refilled. We concluded the last episode somewhat unfairly, delivering a stunning blow to King Sagar, informing him that every one of his 60,000 sons is dead. How does one even comprehend such a loss? The king moves mindless to the world around him. So many rounds of unsuccessful in vitro, then after years of tapas, he'd finally gotten them. Flawed as they were his children. He sees the hand of destiny at work. Feeling the full weight of his years as he plods now cold, echoing corridors, he wipes his eyes and talks to his grandson, Anshuman, the only descendant left and really the only one who turned out well. You're all I have now, my son. You're the only one who can save us. He explains to Anshuman that he has a duty. I'm an old man, stooped in grief. You must set this matter right. You must retrieve the horse so we can conclude our sacrifice. And you must rescue the spirits of your uncles so they may get to heaven. Anshuman, let's give him a 0.5 for being a good guy, even though we're never going to see him again. Anshuman feels deep compassion for his grandfather and acts with urgency, hopping on the next plane to the edge of the ocean. Following his uncle's footsteps is not hard, what with the tumult they left behind. Walking in the lacerated belly of the earth, soon he comes to the same bucolic scene his uncles had encountered, a verdant pasture in which is seated a sage with the horse grazing peaceably beside him. Instinctively, Anshuman approaches the rishi and offers his respects. Ask me two boons and you shall have them. Speaking with humility, Anshuman asks for the horse. Second, I'd ask for water to cleanse the spirits of my uncles. Rishi Kapil smiles. Goddess Ganga herself shall descend to earth to cleanse them of sin. Many of us have been to India, and many of us live in India, so we're all familiar with the river the Greeks dubbed the Ganges, currently beleaguered and abused, polluted with every manner of refuse. But Hindu tradition from the beginning of time views the earth as sacred, its trees and forests worthy of reverence, its waters alive and holy. None more so than the river Ganga, which is an embodiment of the goddess Ganga. Now, you and I have met Ganga before, though it was dark and the music was loud, so you may not remember. She'd plonked herself on King Prateep's left knee. Or was it his right knee? How could I forget such an important detail? And been told with amusement that that was the place for children. Daughter of the great Himalaya, sister to Uma Parvati, sister-in-law to Shiva, she's the mother of Bhishma, briefly married to King Shantanu. We know her as an irrepressible, unpredictable, mischievous free spirit wielding power over life and death beyond the ken of mortals. King Sagar's grandson, Anshuman, is now going to initiate an effort to entice her to earth, an effort that will take 3 generations. But first things first. Mission accomplished. Anshuman messages his grandfather with multiple exclamation marks and a victorious thumbs up. He returns home to complete the horse sacrifice. Now, there's a lot to be said about the horse sacrifice, and the Mahabharata, in fact, will spend a full book saying it. But right now, we must press on. 60,000 restless spirits require, well, rest. Anshuman dedicates himself to bringing Ganga to earth. He takes the beaten path, standing on one toe, etc., following the Tapasvin's handbook diligently. But not good enough. Though he works at it all his life, not a hint or cue of the goddess Ganga. In the next generation, his son makes similarly best efforts, to similarly no success. The kingdom then falls to his son, Bhagiratha, who's the stubborn sort to scorn defeat. King III pulls out all the stops. Determined to accomplish what his forefathers could not, he entrusts his kingdom to his ministers and commits himself to doing nothing other than bringing Ganga to earth. He treks deep into the Himalayas. Eating no more than a bird, he does mad tapas day and night, surrounded by tigers and tuskers and parrots and peacocks, virulent vipers, buzzing bees, warbling woodpeckers, the tallest trees. He dwells there for 1,000 years. Winters come and winters go, flowers bloom and fall, through snow and showers, torrents and thunderstorms, he's unwavering. Then one day, a young woman appears before him. For a millennium, he's been planning what to do and say, how he'll fling himself at her feet and beg. But now, so old is he appeals to her like a father. My forefathers perished an ignominious death. Only you can take them to heaven. Wash over their ashes, cleanse them of sin, and the peace they didn't have in life, let them have in the afterworld. Ganga appreciates the straight talk. Okay, I'll do it, but there's a problem. My fall from heaven will crater the earth. There needs to be someone who can break my fall. They walk together and brainstorm and come to the obvious conclusion. There's only one who has that kind of strength. Petition the god Shiva, and if he'll catch me, I'll drop from the heavens. Bhagiratha is by now an old, tired man, but gears up for another round of tapas. He receives 5 minutes with Shiva at the golf course. He talks quickly as Shiva swings. Got it. Send me the deets and I'll put it on my calendar. The day off, all the gods, Gandharvas, Rishis and Rakshasas gather in their galleries to witness. Ganga appears, too formidable for the eye to behold. Her skirts of raging whirlpools, their threads fish and crocodile, her hair cascading waterfalls, and she like a sparkling water nymph. Down the Milky Way, and then she jumps and lands in a robe of velvet foam on the top of Shiva's head. So, she smiles at Bhagiratha, where do you want me? He's mapped out 3 routes for her to choose. She divides herself into 3. Then skipping and dancing, thundering and frothing, she flows to the ocean. The Pandavas rest a while, marveling at the majesty of the Ganga. both sprightly and terrifying. Then they press on to their next major stop, the ashram of a rishi named Rishyasringa, born of a man and a doe. Yes, you heard that right. Man and doe, a deer, a female deer. But isn't that, Sahadeva hesitates over the word, then settles for forbidden? The tour guide Rishi Lomash gives him a stern look. This is not that, okay? He snaps and tells them the tale of Rishi Rishyasringa, let's call him Rish for short, who's not strictly connected to our story, so let's give him a 1 on our must-remember scale. A certain Rishi had spent years in the jungle, living a simple, austere, celibate life. Then one day, he's bathing in the river, when who should happen along but Urvashi, the Bella Hadid of Apsaras, in a micro bathing suit. It was uncontrollable, you see. The body sometimes charges ahead of the mind. He couldn't help it. Now, it happened that there was a thirsty doe downstream, drinking the water. And you get the picture, right? Unwittingly, she consumed the Rishi's VE and found herself with child. It happens sometimes. Don't be so judgy about things. The Pandavas have questions. Okay, fine. We have questions. A, what? And B, how did the Rishi learn the final destination of his sacred essence? How did the pregnancy go? How did the deer population react some 200 days later when, instead of a little fawn, a baby boy tumbled out? And how did the Rishi receive the child? We will never know. What we do know is that rishis are powerful people with abilities beyond our ken. Unless you, gentle listener, are also a rishi, then you'll know that said rishi collects his son and rears him as a single father. The boy grows up in the jungle, all human but for one notable birthmark, an antelope horn jutting from his forehead. This inspires the name Rishyasringa, literally rishi with the horn. Now, you might think this is an inconsequential tale, but the story of our unicorn sage has import for another famous figure we know and love. Anyone heard of Prince Ram of Ayodhya? As the story is told in the Valmiki Ramayana, Ram's father, King Dashrata, had many wives, but no children other than possibly one daughter whom he possibly gave to his friend for adoption. It's complicated. To alleviate his at least boyless situation, among other remedial efforts, he invites our boy unicorn Rish to Ayodhya for a visit. Why, you ask? Well, cross-culturally, unicorns are thought to generate fertility benefits. False unicorn root is still marketed as a herbal remedy for aspiring parents. But more importantly for our case, Rish has a special story that confers him with fertility powers in a uniquely Indian yogic tantric kind of way. So, in the kingdom of Anga, roughly modern-day Bihar, lives a king whose name does not matter to us. His claim to fame is that one time he was mean to Brahmins, so is punished by Indra with drought. Years pass, rain clouds come, hover teasingly over his kingdom, then drop their waters across the border on the next kingdom. His people suffer. The king is sorry, but has no recourse until one day someone offers a novel solution. Why don't you invite the boy unicorn Rishyasringa to your kingdom? And not only will the rains come, but your kingdom will be fertile in all its domains. He is gesturing, of course, to the declining birth rate. Desperate, the king is ready to try anything and immediately evolves a plan to lure our Rishi Rish from the forest. It's a story straight out of Jungle Book, Anderson, the CNN reporter gushes, eager to draw, however incorrect, links between a feral child and a highly cultivated Brahmin. Here's a man, born of a doe, who's lived his entire life in the woods. He's literally never seen a human other than his father. Can you imagine? Sociologists across the globe are a-twitter about it, but the king has sternly forbidden contact. Rishi Rish is pure and uncorrupted, and though a young man of 18, utterly chaste in mind and body. Anderson's experts marvel at the contrast with contemporary teen culture, the right bewailing its loss of innocence, the left defending its irreverence as heroic resistance to authority. Faced with the difficult problem of luring such a man hundreds of miles away, the king does the obvious. He engages a courtesan. Now, we haven't met many courtesans, but in ancient India, there were educated Renaissance women, specialists in many kinds of art. One retired one in particular has gifts as a designer and architect. I swear this is true. I'll post the reference on the website if you don't believe me. The king allocates her a generous budget and she gets to work. First thing, she hires a shipbuilder. I want you to build me a 100-meter yacht. She designs it herself, with attention to every detail. It's going to be a full-scale forest ashram on water. Artisans get building astonishingly lifelike trees. The entire deck is a meadow of green, with lilting wildflowers. Bougainvilleas climb pillars and posts, morning glories the walls. But the exterior is where the true art lies. It's a study in camouflage. The transition from ship to land is so seamless, even foreign intelligence can't distinguish where the forest ends and the yacht begins. The courtesan oversees every detail until it's complete. Then she summons her daughter. All week long, camera crews have been setting up in the forest. The better funded have come prepared. Telephoto lenses, bug spray, high altitude drones. As the ship docks silently on the bank, they mobilize and a young woman hops off onto land. I'm off to fetch firewood. Microphones pick up sound as the father leaves the ashram. Once the father's a safe distance away, the girl enters the ashram. The young man is seated in study. He's all teen idol good looks. His hair's long, his eyelashes curly, and there's a cute little horn jutting out of his forehead. Concluding his study, he rises and stops dead when he sees the girl. What must be going through his head, Anderson? The CNN reporter whispers. One can only imagine. It must be like his brain's exploding. The girl steps forward bashfully. Hello. Rish has never met another human, but he does know his manners. Hi, can I offer you water, fruit? I picked some berries this morning. The girl laughs charmingly. On the contrary, I come bearing you gifts. She opens a picnic basket and starts setting up lunch. Fluffy white rice cooked with the most delicate spices. Lamb curry, butter chicken, delicious kheer for dessert, all with a bottle of chilled Sauvignon Blanc. She feeds him teasingly, tilting his chin, stroking his arm, caressing him. The cameras cut away discreetly. When they return, she's gone, and the man's in a state of wild agitation. What's the matter, my son? You look like you've seen a ghost. His father immediately notes the difference. Dad, you'll never believe what I saw today. I met another student. He was like from another world, Dad, like nothing I've ever seen before. Rish can hardly contain himself. He was so perfect, we're like hairy gorillas compared to him. Not tall, but not short, with a face to make your heart fall out. His waist was tiny, but then curved like a scythe into his hip. He was amazing, Dad. He had these glittering circles dangling from his ears. And his chest? Dad, that was the most wondrous thing. It had these two perfect globes, like luscious fruit. And not a hair on his chest, Dad. Can you believe it? He smelt like lilacs. Music played when he walked. Rish is in both rapture and agitation. He touched me, Dad, put his mouth on mine. My flesh burns everywhere he touched me. We played. He gave me delicious cold water to drink. Snap out of it. His father's very annoyed. That's not a student, that's a demon. And he's not your friend. They stalk the earth in these wondrous forms, all sweet and pretty, but they're very cruel. Their goal is to destroy you. You must never see him again. But Dad, Rish is shocked. Seeing him stricken, his father explains more gently. They're not hermits like us, son, devoted to tapas. Their purpose is to take you away from your tapas. A self-controlled man never yields to such things. But even a teenage boy who's known only the jungle is driven by hormones, and Rish cannot reconcile himself to his father's directions. When the old man leaves the next day to be away a week, Rish writes a hasty note. What's he doing? The CNN reporter wonders aloud to her cameraman as the drone follows Rish out of the ashram. I think he's looking for her. Cameras follow as our unicorn Rish searches for his friend. For 3 days he wanders, combing trees and lakes and hollow caves. But his dear new friend, who's captured his heart, has all but vanished. In tears of despair, he heads homeward when, hello, a mellifluous voice calls him from the bush. In a split second, Rish sizes up the situation. His father's out, his friend is here, this is the opportunity. He grabs her hand. Quick, let's run before my father returns. She takes a back route to the ship. Where they go, he's uncaring. Soon the ship cuts smoothly through the waters to dock a few days later at the kingdom of Anga. In our next episode, the king of Anga will greet Rish, while his father will return home to find his ashram empty. He'll have the same reaction as Liam Neeson when he realizes his daughter's taken. That story next time, if you'll join me for another episode of the Mahabharata.